Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here on a Monday morning to recap what we saw in championship weekend in the NFL and talk a little bit about these opening lines in for the Super Bowl. I'm sure Andy may have a Pro Bowl hot take for us too. We'll probably talk some tennis. The Australian Open's going on right now.
We won't be talking Pro Bowl. Please, if you can do anything for us, we've never asked anything from you in the past. Just don't watch the Pro Bowl,
please.
So the ratings will get so low that they'll just stop doing it because it is the worst of the four major sports. As far as an all-star game, and like it's the one where like legitimately a star player could get hurt the most easily, I think.
Yeah.
Nobody needs that.
What did you think this weekend, Andy? Did you have a good weekend?
I mean, parts of it were all right. I guess
financially good, but thank
God. Like, I never do this either, but I went ham on that Patriots to win the AFC. It's like you talked me into it. You're stupid. This was way back. I had to check when I placed this. It was like in November.
October. Yeah.
Patriots to win the AFC. I went as big as I've ever gone on a future at even money even. And boy, my day was about to start very poorly.
No, never in doubt, man.
Yeah, so Patriot. Yeah, basically, I had Patriots money line for 10 units there, but at even money. And then obviously the teaser cash, that was nice. I was up right away. I ended up just because I was rage betting. I ended up betting a little bit on the Patriots live too, and it was a plus number. So the Patriots comeback was huge. The night game was ugly for me as a Vikings fan, and honestly, it just unless you're an Eagles fan or Nick Foles' parents, it wasn't that great of a game to watch.
No, it was an easy one to tune out when there was tennis on. I have to say, it was easy.
Once 6 o'clock hit.
Yeah, and actually, you know what happened that was annoying? My biggest bet on that game was the over. And I was getting a little nervous in this third quarter. I was like, man, dude, I hope they don't just run out the clock here.
That was dicey, actually.
It was dicey. And then the Vikings scored the touchdown on fourth and goal. And I was like, yes, there's the over. I could finally switch it off. And I turned it off. And I looked back and it's like, oh, wait, no, it was incomplete pass. And there's no touchdown. So I'm like, God damn it. Now I got to pay attention to this garbage game for another 15 minutes and have my, had my fingers and toes crossed for one more score because I think I had 39 and it was at 38 at that point. So I was like, this is going to go down as one of the worst beats if this doesn't get over, but it came through.
Yeah. We were pretty spot on for the Eagles.
We're
spot on the totals as far as Vikes over, Patriots under.
Yeah. Those two were pretty, you could see those coming a mile away and both were a little sweaty there. The end, but made it home safely. The Jags and the points, I don't think was ever, they were never outside of the cover. That was good from whistle to whistle, which was pretty cool. Sorry for anyone who had Jags money line. Obviously, I'm in the same boat with you. I had the Patriots to win the AFC in a pretty large position, and I needed that one to come home. It's funny. I think.
Didn't you have a Bama Patriots parlay?
Yeah. Oh, I had a Bama Patriots parlay that was like
never in doubt.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, never in doubt. Never in doubt. I had some Patriots preseason to win the AFC at like plus 200 ish, and I was like, man, it's crazy that a live in-game money line on the Patriots in the AFC title game was probably like the first time since, like, it was approaching the preseason odds for them to win the AFC title game, which was kind of crazy. It's like you could go the full season and then in game get about the same odds as you could have gotten, 5 months ago. It was pretty crazy. So Patriots win. Patriots Super Bowl. Everybody wants to see this, right? The whole universe is pretty happy and excited for Patriots in the Super Bowl. Everybody?
Well, I mean, it is just sun comes up, sun goes down, Patriots win the AFC. That's just how it goes. Have you seen, as far as like terrible fan bases, so no offense, Philadelphia, but I am seeing some videos coming out. Have you seen any of these, Whale?
Which ones for
any like they're like throwing full beer cans at Vikings fans leaving the stadium. Oh, just like, terrible. It looks like a goddamn war zone in there. It's terrifying.
No, you can
like Philly fans, very happy for you. Chill out a little.
Take it down a notch. Yeah.
You saw like that picture. It was a pre-game. What do you call it? The tailgating where the shirtless guy is like tackling a horse, the police horse. Yes. And then you see him with his bloodied face getting hauled out of there.
It's unbelievable.
Man, it's like noon.
It's like you can always count on Bill's Mafia to do Bill's Mafia stuff, but they're generally lighthearted and fun. And then you can kind of always count on Philly fan to be Philly fan. And boy, do they need to take it down a notch. But congratulations, Philly. I felt like a dope in hindsight for not seeing it, I guess.
The
letdown after the miracle. Exactly. Philadelphia has been at home since December 17th. They had no road games the final 2 weeks of the season. Then they got the bye and they got two home games in the playoffs. Like they haven't had to travel. They've been relaxed. They've been rested. The defense didn't really have to, use any of its bullets down the home stretch. So they could, they could pull out and try as hard as they could possibly try. And I think we saw them, on an effort-based level, really win the day for the Eagles on that side of the ball. The mini defense, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, that they betrayed all of the statistics and numbers that they compiled over the course of the season these last two games. And it's not obvious to me what was different about them here in the playoffs. I mean, usually it's, it's a colloquial defense wins championships, and I think that's because, like, it's not usually up to one person choking like it is sometimes with offense. One person choking can kind of, totally screw your game up. And the mini defense was, felt like kind of like an overall unit letdown, which is strange because it's not like they really had to play particularly hard down the stretch. So I don't know. I really am not sure what to make of this. I thought that was a good unit, and I thought they just had two pretty horrendous games there to end the season. So.
Yeah, it was a great unit, and when Sendejo went out again, and then Rhodes saw some time on the sidelines, and that was really tough. And then Nick Foles decided to play the best game of his life ever, career.
Yeah,
I mean he did have, I think he had like a 7-touchdown game or once.
That's true.
It was not in the NFC Championship game against a defense that had given up, historically low third down conversions. I mean, just they weren't stopping him for anything. It looked like the Vikings were going to run at first. They go down, score, stop him, get the ball back, moving, and then just all hell broke loose. It's just such a hard downhill slope from there.
Yeah. So, how do we take what we now? Or what we saw from these Eagles the last 2 weeks and translated into how they'll show up in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. It's not going to, it's not intuitive to me that they're just going to, be as good as they were at home off of all of this rest and against a team where, they had, some motivational angles and some situational angles over. This is a much more neutral situation here. And we've seen that work against, teams that were favored in the past. We've seen that work against teams that kind of like had a whole ton of momentum heading into the Super Bowl. We've seen it work against them in the past. So how do you start this handicap for the Super Bowl? I guess any situational angles that stick out for you, or do you think that I'm kind of characterizing right that this is sort of like a neutral setting?
I don't know if the indoor setting favors either team. Maybe the Eagles a little. They'll be a lot faster. Those, the receivers faster against that the defense for the Patriots is still slow. They're better. They're much, much better than they were, but they're still not an overall speedy defense as a whole. So I think maybe being indoors will favor Philly, but the 2 week break definitely favors New England. Just giving Belichick and that staff 2 weeks to prepare. That's all. I saw a stat somewhere on Twitter as far as just Belichick with 8+ days to get ready for a game, and his ATS record was pretty high. I'll have to pick that up. Maybe retweet that here later, but it was good. Obviously, the Gronk injury is huge. I really, really need to hear he's healthy before I even think about betting on the Patriots. He'll be able to eat pretty nicely, I think. Good linebackers, but maybe we saw Kyle Rudolph doing some work too. Maybe the only guy really doing any work against that defense last week or yesterday. Yeah, Gronk's a big part of it. Boy, that was it, Miles Jack? That was looking like that was going to be a huge injury, and then they lost the game, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I agreed.
But there wasn't a whole lot for injuries, but that is a monster. He is there. He is a big, big, big part of their offense. I thought the Vikings ran the ball pretty decent. I think you'll see that happening again. Just the Patriots run scheming has been great. They use whoever they decide to use that week is going to be great. Deion Lewis has been pretty hot for about 8 weeks now. He's going to be coming out of the backfield, catching a lot of passes. And the with the Patriots, I don't know, Belichick and McDaniel, they love to add stuff through the season as far as, you know, where some teams don't like to continually add and confuse their offense. They'll add plays to the playbook all year long, well into the playoffs. You might see a bunch of formations that we haven't even seen yet this year. You just never know what those guys are. They're playing chess.
Yeah. Yeah, man. When I saw the line come out and I saw it take an initial dip, let's talk through this a little bit, I guess. It opened at 6 and it took an initial dip down. You know, the look ahead was, I think, supposed to be 7, right?
Yeah.
And I guess because Patriots barely won and the Eagles just throttled the team that they were expected to be a little bit worse than, you know, that adjusts everybody's expectations. And so instead of 7, we see 6, and then right away, there's immediate money on the underdog here, pushes it down to 5. It was tough not to pull the trigger right then and there on the Pats. I think the way that you set it up was really pretty outstanding just now. I love the way that Belichick and company comes prepared for a game when they have 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent. We've got a good amount of tape now on Nicholas Edward Foles, in this iteration of Nick Edward Foles. I definitely wonder what in the heck happened. Like in 2013, he was an MVP candidate. He was like 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And, you know, he went like started 10 games and won 8 of them or something. So, you know, to go from that to the next year, just kind of being an average quarterback and then below average and then kicked around from St. Louis to Kansas City back to Philly and kind of out of the sport, now being able to kind of resurrect himself this way is pretty amazing. And, you know, I might need to be made a believer, right? Like you might need to do it 3 times really before I ever really am like, okay, well, you're getting my money. And I feel like there are ways that you can scheme defensively to make it tougher on him. Obviously, you know, he made every single throw that was asked yesterday, but, you know, he was going up against some second unit players that, as you mentioned, Sadeo and Rhodes missed some serious time. And when you had, you know, when you have backfill, sometimes it can give your quarterback a little confidence as he's making some more difficult throws that are to open guys. Philly skill position players are fine. Jeffrey obviously had an amazing game yesterday, and they have some other talented players. But, I think, you know, assuming Gronk is healthy, assuming, you know, that you have a full complement of weapons at Brady's disposal, it's really difficult for me to see how Philadelphia in any way, shape, or form stops them from hanging like 35 points in this game. You know, you look at the recent results with Philly's defense kind of keeping teams in the 10 points and under range. I don't think that's at all achievable on a neutral field, on a fast field against this Patriots offense. Yeah, it's going to be tough for me not to drop a healthy nugget here on Patriots, and I'll probably be willing to sell a couple of points or a half point or so here to get the juice down. Yeah, we'll see how it all plays out, but let's see a healthy Gronk and let's get a good number here. You got any early thoughts on the total at 48?
Don't think the Patriots defense is that good. I still don't. They've showed up a lot more throughout the season, as we've said. I think the Eagles can score. I'm absolutely leaning the over. I'd go over 48, over 49. I think the Patriots, like you just said, I don't see a situation where they score less than like 27, 28 points. And I don't think that it's probably into the 30s. I really just picture it in a game where they win it like 34-24, 34-21. They're going to give up some points too. Those are just too talented of receivers, too talented of backs. And if Foles can get half the effort he's had in the last game here, and, you know, half the success rather, I really see this one going over.
Yeah, the total's probably deflated a little bit because people haven't really recognized that the Eagles have been playing on their home field for so many weeks in a row now, and that's really making their defense look better than it is, I think. And they're playing outdoors on kind of a relatively tricky surface. You put this game indoors on that fast turf in Minnesota, I think you're going to see some points too. I agree with your lean there on the over. Do you think that Patriots defense – would you give them any credit for stopping Jacksonville in the fourth quarter, or would you hang all of that on? I mean, because I guess there's two ways you could read how the Patriots came back against the Jacks. They were down 20-10 for Christ's sakes. There was a 10 points in the second half of that game that they needed to come back from. Was it adjustments made on the Patriots defensively in stopping the Jaguars, or would you put it more on the Jaguars just going uber stupid conservative and just
Find this thread. This friend of the show, friend of us, Suma from Germany, in her chat here, put Warren Sharp, great follow. You should probably at Sharp Football. He has a lot of good stats and analysis for football, but he wrote a thread, and you can tell by the way he wrote this how passionate he was about this as far as – and also, like we've always said, I think there was an episode with Lockie that we said, it's just so nice to be right. And he puts out that book, the Sharp Football Analysis book, at the beginning of the year, and his football preview, rather. And he absolutely, pegged the Jacksonville's – predictable offense and how their defense was going to be so good. So, I mean, he kind of did want to toot his own horn a little as far as how right he was, but he did. He broke it down proper as far as the Jaguars second half. I'm going to retweet it right now, this thread, and it's a tweet, but he writes, it's a big thread where he replies to himself about 25 times, and it's absolutely worth reading if you're interested in this, because what the Jaguars did, and I felt watching the game, I felt like they were being so incredibly predictable, but then with the way he breaks it down, I mean, they absolutely just did the same thing over and over, no matter how poorly it was working, and they went away from what they'd done in the first half that had, put up points against the Patriots and kept them off the field. And they were not taking time off the clock. They were not getting first downs. They were ending up in long third downs. And just, I mean, they really, really, really dicked themselves. Like, I feel like Tom Brady's great. Belichick's great. Maybe other teams wouldn't have been able to come back, even with Jaguars ineptness in the second half. But it really, really helped the Patriots out the way they were, the way they were running. I mean, it was like first down, run into the line, second down, throw it 15 to 20 yards, probably incomplete. There you've taken like 30 seconds off the clock. Then you're in third and eight. You pass it again. You don't get it. The clock stops and you punt. You've taken no time off the clock. You've given it back to one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And you didn't get any points. You haven't opened up the lead any further. It just keeps getting smaller. And boy, it's the way he wrote that. It's just like, yep, that's what happened. Jaguars really bottled it.
Yeah, and it was you give Belichick and Brady too many chances, they're gonna burn you. I'd like one other opinion from you here, real quick, and then let's talk about some of the other stuff that's going on in sports that you're excited about right now, because it's kind of the end of the NFL season as we know it. I can't really comment on this. I muted the refs entirely from my timeline because I just didn't want to hear people bitching about it. How influential do you think that the calling, the penalty calls were against the Jags defense? Did you feel like they were all warranted? Did you feel like some of them were borderline? Did you feel like that was what made the difference in the game?
I think many NFL games, you can look at, if you actually broke down like the all 22 and looked at what got called and the officials, they do this for them. Like the head of officiating and that the league office looks at everything to grade the officials. And I think if you did that, you'd find that most games were tilted one way or the other. Just that's how it worked. And, sometimes it's just the ref didn't see something, they're just people watching football in real time where they don't get to see, all the slow motion replays after the fact. So I will say the missed calls and the calls that were getting called definitely did help the Patriots. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that. But, and just being the Cheatriots, being the people who've gotten caught, being the people that, the team that the NFL doesn't want in the Super Bowl and the Jaguars, like the conspiracy theory writes itself. So, I mean, there could have been two or three less penalties called, one way or the other like that, as far as you're saying, tilted towards the Patriots, and we still would have been hearing about this. So it was a little sketchy, but you just never know. It's a fast game and there's seven of them out there and they don't see everything. And so, there's a lot of judgment calls. It's a super tough, like I would think being a referee would be a very, very tough job. It can't be any fun at all for the most part, just getting yelled at. But I think it did lend to the comeback. I don't think you can argue that it didn't.
Yeah.
The calls. I mean, there was a missed holding call that was pretty brutal because it was right on the edge where the play was unfolding and they didn't call it. That was rough. And then the pass interference, there are six or seven examples if you listen to the people on Twitter, but I don't believe in, refs getting paid off by the league or anything.
No,
like, there's some people that are really, really getting deep on it. And I don't believe in that.
Yeah, the one call that I thought was a little egregious because it was like one of the better defensive plays I felt like I saw all season was the A.J. Bowie pass interference down the sidelines at the end of the first half. I didn't think that was particularly well called. And, that set them up for an easy touchdown. But granted, there was enough time on the clock and they had the momentum and the need to put points on the board. I feel like they would have gotten a touchdown anyway, but it still is a bummer when, there's questionable calls.
The fumble where I don't like this in any sense, in any game where there's a turnover and a recovery, whether it's an interception or whatever, and they get really quick with the whistle. Like you have to look at it. It's a turnover, so it's automatically reviewed by the referees and whatnot.
It's a great
point. just don't blow that whistle because he was not touched. He wasn't down. Yeah. So he should have been able to advance that ball, and he might have advanced it all the way.
Yeah, that would have been pretty incredible, and I agree with you on that. Okay, well, so. sorry about your Vikings, man. I really thought we were going to get a Pats Vikings Super Bowl.
We have a saying here in Minnesota. We'll get them next year. Yeah. That's kind of weird. It just is what it is.
Well, good to use that a couple times a year, I imagine. Okay. Well, what do you say about in football? I mean, in sports now, besides, now that we only have one football game left to cap here, you got college basketball, NBA, tennis. What are you up to? Soccer?
Oh, there's always soccer. We're getting to the second half of the seasons for all the big European leagues, and those are always fun because they're in the morning sometime if you really want to. If you really find something you like and you want to bet all day long, like I do. But yeah, tennis is really, I don't have to tell you, has taken some time off my life. Because yes, you get this, and for people who don't follow tennis, and we talked about this a little on the Aussie pod, you kind of get November and December off. Like it's a full year thing. But a lot of people, there's not great tournaments at the end of the year. People are taking time off, vacations, holidays, and then it just ramps right up into one of the four slams. And it happens to be 17 hours ahead of me in Melbourne, Australia, where the matches start at 6 p.m. and go till what? There was one where I woke up in the morning at like 7 a.m. and there was a match still going.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, I've been up too late, been getting up too early. I woke up, I'd eaten way too many hot wings yesterday at the bar watching the game. And I woke up and I had to get rid of some hot wings at like 2 a.m. And I ended up staying up till 4 watching tennis and live betting, which I made money, but I'm so tired right now.
I
wake up at 2, stay up till 4, and then go back to sleep till like 6.
After, how do you like our boy?
And it's hard to Sandgren. Sleep. And that was the one I live bet. I did some more tennis Sandgren live betting and took down a little money line on him. And then you sit there and you win a plus 300 money line, and then it's hard to go back to sleep because you're like, yeah, look at me.
Good so stuff. Little backstory on Tennis Sandgren here. Tennis Sandgren is the last American player in the tournament. He has miraculously made it to the quarterfinals, upsetting previous champ Stan Wawrinka, albeit Stan was hurt, and most recently taking out
number five
Dominic Thiem in a 5-set battle. And this is just a truly remarkable run. Before this tournament, Tennis Sandgren had not won any match in a major. He was pretty much kind of making his bones on the challenger circuit. I think his career earnings on tour were like something in the 400,000
over the last. Yeah. He turned pro in like 2011. He'd made about $450,000
over what? Six years.
Yeah. The Aussie dollar is like 75 cents to the dollar, I think. But like his guaranteed winnings at this point is like 450,000 Aussie dollars, which isn't as talented as an American, but still, like he has never ever played this hard. So,
yeah, he is getting it done, and he's kind of the unofficial mascot of our tennis chat. Last spring, he was playing the Savannah Challenger, I think. And they had a giveaway for a signed hat, and for whatever reason, we got super into it. And we got chirping back and forth with them on Twitter because he's got a Twitter presence that's pretty entertaining. He's a very unique fellow, how did it go? The caption contest, caption this photo contest,
win a tennis hat. Mike, is it Mike Cation that you see his last name?
I hate to butcher it. So.
But he's a tennis, what do you call it?
Broadcaster?
Broadcaster, yeah. He broadcasts some of the smaller tournaments. He's actually down in Australia right now, and he had a little caption contest. Back in the day, tennis used to have long – he looked like just a dirt ball. With his
he was a grizzled too. Man, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Long hair. He's actually – like so if you've only seen him play in the Aussie – he didn't used to look like that. He used to look like he was, he actually posted a good clip, Matthew McConaughey from True Detective.
Oh, Absolutely.
Kinda, that was,
he had that look. Oh, yeah, he did. He did have that look. Rusty Cole.
So I won, I won a caption contest, got a free hat, was autographed by Australian Open quarterfinalist Dennis Sandgren.
And
then he ended up winning that Challenger tournament. So I joked with those guys on Twitter that, boy, this hat's getting more valuable by the day. And I pinned that tweet anyway, because that
what's
was last
funny
night.
Is, what's
we
funny
like
is that
we're tennis hipsters. We like tennis Sandgren before it was cool.
Yeah, I max bet him to win the French Open last year. He didn't win a match. I max bet him to win the U.S. Open last year. I say max bet. The max bet you're allowed when you have like 1,000 to 1 is like $1 on 5 bets. So I think I had $1 on him to win $1,000 or so. Or 10, maybe he's busy. 10,000?
Yeah,
it was a big number.
It only let you bet like $1. I remember that. You showed me that.
Yeah, I bet $1 on tennis. I didn't bet him this time. Unbelievably stupid of me. I don't have a tennis bet. I do. Thank you to our friend Kelly, though.
Chung.
A $5 bet on Chung at 800 to 1. I cannot believe this has a chance. Chung looks so freaking good. He literally looked like Djokovic 2.0 in this match yesterday. And I don't know if you caught any of the replays or any of the clips, but he's playing out of his freaking mind. And he has a shot here, man. He's going to be, Chung tennis. And then presumably he would get Federer if Federer gets by verdict. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this tournament, to be honest, at this point, just because those upsets were so crazy. This is so rare that you have upsets of this magnitude at this stage in a major, let alone the Australian Open. So kind of makes you think anything can happen from here. Who do you predict wins the men's at this point, seeing what you've seen?
It just still feel like there's a lot of good stories. Chung is fun. He's a really – we talked about this in the chat earlier – as far as from midsummer to the next gen finals there at the end of the year, he really got good. Now he's really, really starting to show like he's going to be a top 10 player this year.
Absolutely. He finishes in the top 10 easily.
It's crazy how good he got. Yeah. And he's fun. And the Sandgren thing is fun, but he's got another huge roadblock coming up. It just feels like, Roger Federer has had such a nice, easy coast. He's got the easy side of the. It's funny we said he had the tough side.
He
had the tough side. Everyone felt bad for Roger, and now he's got. Well, I mean, how many people are left on that side that are even seated?
Dude, Burdick is the only one.
It's the only one. If he gets through this quarterfinal match, which he's won the last 9 matches against Tomas Burdick, and I think I looked at it. We were talking about it earlier. He's only dropped 2 sets in those 9 matches. One of them being a slam match even last week. So, at Wimbledon, he took him out 3-0, and. It's that, and then beat an unseeded player to go to the finals, where you get, Gregor or Rafa, maybe Chung, who knows?
Chung would be semifinal.
No, Chung is on his side. Cilic, Gregor, Rafa, who's the fourth on that side?
Edmund.
I can see any of those 4 making the finals. They've all had pretty decent tournaments. Rafa just doing what Rafa does.
It's really tough to say.
Kyle Edmund doesn't look like a head case anymore. Grigor's back. He's been playing tough. Probably he had a nice end of the year, too. What does that leave us? Cilic. He shouldn't have nerves.
He's been to finals.
He's been to slam finals.
Looks healthy. He's playing his game.
I think it'll be a really good final, no matter who comes out of that side, and then it'll be Roger coming out of the bottom half, and hopefully that's they usually do it right as far as the final. It'll start at what, like 7 in the morning Central Time.
No way. They always put that fucker in the middle of the night for us.
It'll probably start at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I bet you it'll start at 3 a.m. for you. It'll be it's going to go from like 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. for me, so I'm going to be pretty stoked.
Yeah, you're right. I'm thinking French Open is nice. You have that breakfast match.
Yeah, I'd like to see Dimitrov Federer final. That'd be my preference, just because I think that that would make a great for a great matchup. I've seen enough Fedal here. I don't want to see a rematch of last year's final here. I think we're ready for something new. And I do think Federer is to lose at this point. I still think there's value in his odds. He's like still plus money to win it all. And I think that's crazy. He's been playing at night. He's not exhausted from the heat. He's not exhausted from long matches. He's playing easy. I know it hasn't really been close. He hasn't really been pushed. I guess the second set against Fuchs, he had to keep pushed him into a tiebreak, but it really hasn't been. We haven't seen him have to use his most powerful, you know, his tools and dig deep into his, into his bag of tricks. And so he's got it all there for us for the next three matches. And I do think this is Federer's too. So. Yeah,
I'd like to see Fed Edmund just because I jokingly made an Edmund future bet a few rounds ago at 101.
Oh, nice. So, okay.
I think I'd probably have to hedge now.
Let's talk about some futures on the women's side, man. The futures on the women's side, man. I got some serious thinking to do here. I have basically even exposure out here on Woz, Svitz, who look like they're both going to have matchups that they can win tonight to meet in the semifinals. And then I got a smaller position on Kerber, but at longer odds, who looks likely to come out of the top half of this tournament. Who do you see how do you cap the rest of this tournament for the women?
It should be Simona and Svitz. That's Simona, what I'm thinking. Okay. I think Jalapeno there. She's just been playing. She's played some tough matches, and boy, we are gonna fade her against Osaka. I'm glad I forgot about that and didn't do it because she ran through her after a little early ugliness. But yeah, I have Wozniacki and Svitolina futures at 16 and 10 to 1. They are unfortunately on the same side of the bracket at the bottom there. They would face that'd be a semifinal match.
Yes. Yeah.
So they both have to get through one more match here, and then I'll have a 10-1 or a 16-1 in the final for sure, which is a super good place to be. Because that's very, I think either of those girls versus Kerber or Svitolina. I mean, Kerber or Halep, I don't think those are all pretty evenly matched women.
They are. They're super easy. Madison Keys in there too. Keys. Yeah.
They're all fairly even, and it's super easy to hedge when you're not a giant underdog as far as your future. So that's always nice when it gets closer to even odds or better than a dog.
I think what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to grab some coverage on my Kerber. I need coverage on the top half because I'm a little worried about Kerber. She looks like she's a little bit running out of gas a little bit. I know she dropped the hammer on Hsu Hsin or whatever, the Taiwanese woman who she was down to last night. She came back and nuked her in the third set. But I'm a little worried about Kerber running out of gas here. She's played a shit ton of tennis the last 2 weeks.
What did you get for a number on her?
20-1.
Nope.
20-1. Yeah. So I think I might do Keys money line as a coverage tonight, and then grab a Simona to win it all at whatever number she is currently. She's probably like 5 or 6 to 1 still. I haven't looked. I'm probably gonna say four. Okay. Well, I'm probably gonna grab some Keys and some Simona coverage here just in case, because I do think I still think Woz is gonna win this, man, after she came back from
Simona's 6 to 1.
6 to 1? Okay, that's good. Okay. That's really nice coverage then.
Kerber and number one, this is a two-parter. Shout out to Woody, Woodstock wins. I wasn't really paying attention to women's tennis yesterday. And in the deep dive contest, he's had to ask me like 3 different times who he picked for the women's side. I can't remember. And finally it's stuck, and he did pick Kerber, who is the tournament favorite right now as far as outright odds. at 3-1. So he's kind of, I don't think he really watches tennis a lot, but he's following her because it's his pick in the tournament. And he DM'd us the other day last night about how she was losing badly and it wasn't looking good. And I looked and I ended up live betting. What was she? Probably minus 1,000. As far as pre-match, she was probably
pre-match. She was
800 to minus 1,000, somewhere up there.
Huge, and huge.
She was she had lost a set and was down a break, and she was about even money. And I ended up tickling that a little. So shout out to Woody for making me some money, and also your girl is in the final eight.
Yes. Okay. Cool. Cool. All right. Well, good recap for the folks who maybe not following the Australian Open particularly closely. Now is the time you want to tune in. If you just care about who wins and you have a pick in the deep dive tournament of champions that you're looking after. So, good pod, man. Let's wrap this up and get it up for the people.
You want to do a live pick?
Sure. What do you got
on the what do you call it? The Telegram. Somebody just asked about Nadal Cilic over 37 games. Any insight? Live pick.
Fuck.
That's close. That's a good number. I don't know.
I'm really gonna probably place Cilic. I think look for a set over if you want the over, as opposed to the games over.
Oh, over 3.5.
I think this is the potential to be a five setter personally. But there's going to be some gamesmanship. For Cilic to pull off the win, he's not going to be able to just coast into a tiebreak and expect to win a tiebreak. He's going to have to up his level in the first and third and then really just tank second and fourth or something like that if he expects to get a win. I think you can probably look at how Cilic played. He lost. I'm trying to think of the last time he had like a good competitive head to head with Nadal, and I'm drawing a blank because it's been a while, I guess. But it's for him to get the win, he's going to have a match that's kind of drawn out, and you know he's going to have to conserve his level for a fifth set. So I would look for a sets over if anything, as opposed to a games over, because I could see. I don't think this is going to be one that's just stacked up.
Four set under, yeah.
Tiebreaks. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what I would be worried about if I was back in the games over.
Yeah, they played twice last year. It looks like Shanghai and Acapulco, which I don't know.
Neither one is good. Neither one is
non-great indicators. Throw those out. An indoor hard or is Shanghai indoor?
Especially that Acapulco one. Cilic was in such bad shape for that. That was one of the worst tennis matches I've seen Cilic play in his career. He was so out of shape.
They did play each other in the Aussie in 2011. 2011.
Okay. Well, that's not very relevant.
Don't use them. Those aren't relevant.
Okay. No, I would look more at I would try to suss out Cilic's kind of mindset and approach to how he's going to win this by looking at how he kind of performed in the quarterfinals of the French Open and Wimbledon, maybe. Those would be better indicators, even though it wasn't against Nadal. Just what his mindset was, he was willing to give away certain parts of the match in order to kind of save energy to be able to get the win in the end. He'll probably look
it's to like try this to and running, emulate that you gotta, strategy. You know, yeah, exactly. You gotta get that kick.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then we will – obviously, we don't have NFL this weekend, and we are absolutely not going to talk about the Pro Bowl. So, okay, yeah, we'll kind of be dipping and diving on some other things and then really get into a big, heavy Super Bowl preview next week.
Yes. All right, man. Are you excited for the Super Bowl? What's your excitement level?
I mean, it's still the Super Bowl. I don't know. I'm sure plenty of people do the, what do you call, we call them number boards, the squares.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I'm into the number boards to the tune of hundreds of dollars already. And we haven't even got to the game yet. So those are a big thing around here. Everybody has one and every bar secretly has one because they're illegal. And there's a lot of money to be made there. I don't know if I've ever told this story, but the 49ers Ravens Super Bowl the end where the Ravens purposely took a safety on a punt.
Yeah.
With under a minute left, that put me on the final score number, and that safety won me $1,000.
Oh, that's huge.
On one of the boards. It was I had a safety prop. I was supposed to have won it if the score stayed there.
Dude.
And everyone just felt so bad for the guy. And then somebody said, well, who wins it if they take a safety? And they're like, oh, Jesus, it's Andy.
I think I won about $500 on that safety, too, because I had a safety yes prop in that game, and it was like 20-1. So that was fun.
That's nice.
Good safety. Yeah, no, and you know what, actually?
There's been a safety in a lot of Super Bowls lately.
There have been.
Boy, if you talk about cashing a safety prop in that Broncos-Seahawks one,
yeah,
that
man,
had to be the funniest thing ever if you bet that.
Oh, so like, funny.
Okay. And
boing, yep, first score of the game. And then there was a safety, the first score of the game, and the second Giants-Patriots Super Bowl with the intentional grounding in the end zone. Okay, hey, let me see if I can – okay, so – yeah, I mean, I put my excitement level for the Super Bowl at probably a 3 or a 5, maybe. I mean, I'm excited, obviously, that the Patriots are there because I'm a Patriots fan. I think they're going to win their 6th Super Bowl, so that's pretty cool. But I'm not super jazzed for this particular matchup from a handicapping perspective. All that said, I don't have any futures outlaying here, so I'm probably going to go ham on this game in the props. I'm probably going to, usually, if I have, massive liability on the game itself, I tend to tread a little lighter in props and in gameplay. But the Patriots winning the AFC cleared me out. That was the last of the features that I had open. So I'm probably going to go nuts on this. So we better set aside some time to do a good long preview of the Super Bowl here. And we'll look for you. We'll do a pod this week, though. I don't know what we'll talk about, but it'll be fun.
Mystery pod
coming up later this week. Enjoy. All right. And that's a wrap.